Talofa Lover, this is Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific. I'm Susanna Suisuki. Coming up.
This is extremely sad day, sad news for us.
Pacific leaders pay tribute to King Ituhetia also.
Temptations to take bribery is quite strong.
An academic says corruption is rife within the Fiji police force and...
We're gems. You know, coming from the South Pacific, we have this natural culture and humility and morale.
The Pacific Music Awards celebrates its 20th anniversary. As Pacific leaders in Tonga got up on Friday morning for the home stretch of their annual summit, news from Aotearoa New Zealand cast a shadow over the day. The Māori king, King Ituhetia Pōtato Te Whirowhiro VII, has died days after the 18th anniversary celebration of his coronation. He was 69 years old and had been in hospital recovering from heart surgery. Lydia Lewis is in Tonga for the forum.
Ai, kua inga te ia tōtara. O tāpuki e te enua ki te tumurangi, kere kere. Ai re rā, e te ia ariki. Ai re rā. It's a very sad day for us in the Cook Islands. King Ituhetia and the Kingitana has a very close connection to our country, to our people.
That's Cook Islands Prime Minister Mark Brown, who says the memories of King Ituhetia will stick with him. The Secretary General of the Pacific Islands Forum says the news will be felt right across the Pacific.
This is extremely sad day, sad news for us. I think the whole of the Pacific will mourn his passing. We're all here in Tonga, finishing off the leaders' meeting, and this is a devastating news for us.
Tonga's Prime Minister Huakava Meiliku Seosi Sovaleni says Tonga's King, Tupou VI, is currently in New Zealand. And the relationship between Aotearoa and Tonga is strong because of the bonds forged by the two royal families.
I'm sure that the people of Tonga feel the loss of this great leader of the Pacific. At our forge and prayers with New Zealand.
Waikato Tainui will be planning the tangihanga. RNZ's Tumu Māori Shannon Honui Thompson remembers the funeral of his mother.
He was actually became king at his mother's funeral. That's the process. So the king's office has said that he will be going to Turangawaewae Marae. He'll lie in state for 5 days. And then he will also be taken up to the top of their ancestral mountain, or Maunga Taupiri, yeah. And will lie with his mum and yeah. All his tupuna up there. So that's the plan so far. I remember, because I was at that funeral for Dame Te Atai Rangikahu, his mum, you know, thousands and thousands of people lined the Waikato River, the Awa, and she was actually taken along to Taupiri in a waka for the first time. So that was those kind of images I'll never forget. So yeah. I imagine something similar will be held for him.
The Papua New Guinea Parliament is set to resume on Tuesday next week, and again for the opposition, it's a chance to try and unseat the James Marape administration. Efforts to bring a vote of no confidence have dominated PNG politics this year, and as far as the opposition is concerned, will continue next week. In the previous two sessions, the opposition has been easily outmaneuvered by the government side, and each time appeared to not have the numbers anyway. This week, Mr. Marape says he again has no concerns about the likely vote. Don Wiseman asked our PNG correspondent, Scott Whitey, how the opposition campaign is shaping up.
Well, the Prime Minister has stated and restated that he's confident that he has the numbers. From an outsider's perspective, it appears that he has the numbers, the core team members in the government. The most notable movement in the last month has been of Chris Iveta, the Gulf governor, who's moved over to the other side now. Chris Iveta is a former deputy prime minister. He has that level of experience going to the other side. He's acted in the prime minister's position several times in previous governments. Whether he'll be able to muster the numbers and get them together is something that remains to be seen. The opposition leader previously, when I spoke to him, said that the prime minister's post was open to the person who the opposition saw fit, and that they were discussing the makeup of the alternative government, and the prime minister's post is still up for grabs for anyone who can, one, muster the numbers, and two, that the opposition deems fit to lead the opposition onto the floor of parliament for the vote of no confidence.
Well, yes, the only criteria in the end is going to be numbers, isn't it?
Yes, I mean, it's going to be numbers. It's going to also depend a lot on whether the prime minister, alternate prime minister, has the charisma and the money to bring its members to the floor and then convince other members to join.
Who are the likely candidates?
I've asked that question. I've asked that question to the opposition leader, Douglas Tomoriesa. He hasn't given me a straight answer. Obviously, he's not going to be the one putting his hand up to be prime minister. One, the MP that was looking to be PM has been Rainbow Paita. Now that Chris Iveta's moved over, there are discussions around whether he could be the one who's going to put his hand up as the most senior person on the other side for the PM's post.
A Pacific academic says corruption is rife within the Fiji police force because they're underpaid and young policemen are being tempted to compromise their morals. It comes as 28 Fijian police officers were charged with drug-related offences involving unlawful possession of illicit drugs. Alicia Foon spoke with the University of the South Pacific Governance and Social Studies Professor Vijay Naidu.
It has to do with the fact that the police are not very well paid. Temptations to take bribery is quite strong.
How does Fiji police deal with this issue, considering there are so many charges being laid and a lot of new revelations coming to light? I guess the acting police commissioner says these are just the actions of he's quoted, a few individuals, but 28 police officers is quite a large number.
What is apparent is that this problem of drug, abuse, drug consumption, some of the younger policemen are curious about these drugs, and I think they try and make use of it themselves. And then some of them have contacts in the amongst the people who deal in drugs, and through that relationship, we have a number of instances of recently of policemen being charged for stealing drugs that have been confiscated from people who have imported the drug or are manufacturing it here. So that's happened over the last 2-3 years. And now you got 28 of them incriminated, charged. So I think it's just an escalation of the number of police who are involved. And I think further investigations will find some more police involved in this activity.
What impact does this have on the public's view of Fiji police?
The public don't have much trust or confidence in the police. And this emanates from the part that the police has played in all the coups that we have had, and their relative inefficiency in apprehending those who break the law. And also, the people who get arrested often are set free because police prosecutors don't present the evidence properly, or the evidence gathered is not compiled in an adequate way to satisfy the courts. And there's a lot of petty crimes that happen in the country. People couldn't be bothered to go to the police because they reckon it's a waste of time. So the confidence in the police force is relatively low. And of course, these kinds of events actually lead to further mistrust and distrust of the police. Part of the problem, if I may say so, is that unlike Australia and New Zealand, we don't have an independent commission agency to investigate the police misdemeanors in Fiji. And so these internal investigations about police deviant behavior and crimes, including police brutality, you know, is not regarded as being impartial, and they are seen as often covering up for, you know, colleagues. So this is a big problem in terms of investigating the police.
Is this something that the current government can address? I guess, do you believe overall that it's being handled well, or is it being downplayed right now?
Well, I see the government is very concerned, from the Prime Minister to the Minister for Home Affairs, very concerned about this drug issue. And now, you know, the churches and the civil society organizations have all got into this business of expressing their concerns. But for me, as an academic, you know, there is a whole lot of talk about how widespread it is, but we really don't have hard data on the numbers involved, the nature of the drugs being consumed, quantities being consumed, places where this is being consumed, the age, gender, ethnicity of those who are involved in the consumption and in drug dealing. So there's a lot of work to be done beyond, you know, this whole business of people, you know, basically wrenching their, you know, hands and saying, oh, what a problem, you know, we've got to do something about it.
Fiji Police and the Office of the Director of Public Prosecutions have not responded to ongoing requests for comment. Island reggae, hip-hop and heavy metal artists were the big winners at the 2024 Pacific Music Awards held last night in Manukau. The events also marked a significant 20th anniversary milestone for the awards. Pacific musicians, community leaders, fans and family and friends all turned out for the blue carpet event, honouring and acknowledging the creativity and talent of the nominated finalists. We went along for the night. It's a highly anticipated milestone, a tribute acknowledging two decades of Pacific music.
Tonight is about celebrating our incredible Pacific music community, and it is extra special that we are celebrating 20 years of the Pacific Music Awards. Woo!
The event brought out some of the best local and international Pacifica music artists. The awards were created after the New Zealand Music Awards dropped the category for Best Pacific Album in 2004. Co-founder Patrina Tungi Saena recalls its humble debut.
A group got together to have some conversations, and then there was a discussion with Pacifica Festival that potentially they could host us. So it was like an interim before we found a home and a venue. So it was really amazing. So we were outside. So in those days, the festival did an opening night concert in advance of the festival on the weekend, so we were at the end of that evening.
Since then, the PMAs have become one of the country's premier music events. There are 20 categories, including the International Pacific Artist Award, won last night by Tongan musician Josh Datofi. The Hawaiian-raised singer, who recently sold out venues both here and across the Pacific, says despite becoming one of the most popular artists, it's crucial to stay grounded.
Because, you know, our Pacific people, we're gems. You know, coming from the South Pacific, we have this natural culture and humility and morale that we are naturally born with. You know, and I feel like that's some things that people search for.
Taking home the Ministry for Pacific Peoples Lifetime Achievement Award was Tere Moana Rapley, considered to be the First Lady of New Zealand Hip Hop. With many industry accolades to her name, Rapley says there needs to be a shift in the music industry.
I would love to see more of our musicians being able to speak up about what they want to see. I spent 6 years within local government, and learning the ropes around how we can have an influence on policies and regulations.
The big winner of the night was Pacifica heavy metal band Shepherd's Rain, who took away the Best Pacific Language Award and Best Pacific Music Album. Band member and guitarist Gideon Voon says the event is an opportunity to showcase Pacific musicians who are breaking the mold.
For example, you know, many of these people, maybe they haven't grown up with a lot of metal, they haven't heard much metal, but then, you know, this could even be the first time they've been exposed to metal.
That's Pacific Waves for today. For all episodes, head over to rnz.co.nz/Pacific. We're also on Spotify, Apple, and iHeartRadio. From myself and the RNZ Pacific team, tō whā, soifua.